Coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, we talked to JF Chaumont, our French writer, covering the Montreal Canadiens. They've been a great story. We talk Alex Ovechkin breaking the record. I give it to Sean a little bit. Disappointments, the scoring race. It's all coming up and more on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast. As always, it's presented by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Hi, Sean.
Hi,
I'm smiling. I'm smiling. You can't see me smiling, but I'm smiling because Sean knows what's coming.
It is time for me to fall on the sword on so many levels. So I'm just going to get out of the way. Alex Ovechkin broke Gretzky's record. It didn't wait till next year. I think everybody knows that, but anybody that's listened for the last 4 weeks has listened to me say, I think it's going to happen next year. He did it with like seven games left.
Five games left to go.
He went on the ultimate heater. It was crazy. But before we get to that, I owe Jay Pandolfo an apology. Two, because last week we were discussing coaches that could come into the NHL, and I suggested Jay Pandolfo, which was a spectacular
suggestion. Good pull. It's a great pull.
But in my enthusiasm, I created a whole alternative universe where he was coaching a different team than he actually coaches. So congratulations to Jay Pandolfo, who is actually in the Frozen Four and has a chance to win a national championship instead of the alternate reality in which he had lost and had gone home. So good luck to all the teams in the Frozen Four, including Jay Pandolfo's BU team, Boston University. And I think that's it, Dan. I think my apology tour has lasted almost as long as Taylor Swift's last world tour. But I think it's over, and your smile has only grown bigger. Because for the first time in the history of this podcast, I'm the one on the receiving end of all the criticism.
I'm not even going to kill you on Pandolfo. It's an honest mistake. We all make mistakes. That's okay. We're going to let that one go. Before I get to Ovechkin, though, I want to just tease our guest. Our good friend and colleague, JF Chaumont, who covers the Montreal Canadiens for our French website, lnh.com. I think I said that correctly, hopefully. He is the journaliste principal, which is the senior writer. And he joins us shortly here to talk about the red hot and just terrific story that the red hot Montreal Canadiens, who are a terrific story right now. So that is coming up, and they will likely be possibly playing the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs when that begins on April 19th or 20th. But Sean, let's get back to this, because I'm not going to kill you on Jay Pandolfo. That happens, right? It's an honest mistake. Okay, fine. I didn't even catch it in real time. So I can be as much to blame as you are for that one. However, Alex Ovechkin, as I have been saying all season long, will break the record this year. As I have been saying, will break the record at UBS Arena playing the New York Islanders. Now, I thought it would be on April 15th. I didn't think it was going to be on April 6th, but that's what a heater does for you. But I've been saying it that he was going to do it. You've been the detractor in all of this. And I am just going to revel in this moment, because it doesn't come around often for me, Sean. It does not come around often on this podcast where I will throw things against the wall and you can be the voice of reason on many of them. But I was right and you were wrong. So I'm reveling in it a little bit. And what an incredible moment it was to witness in person at UBS Arena on Sunday. It was the single greatest individual achievement that I have seen live.
Well, that's impressive. And it's a great...
In sports.
It's a great achievement. It's 31 years in the making, right? So now in 2056, Dan, when you and I are sitting on our couches still watching hockey, we'll watch somebody else break it because that's what it's become. It's an every 31-year occurrence. It's like Haley's Comet.
Listen,
maybe it's Austin Matthews, maybe it's Gavin McKenna, maybe it's somebody we don't even know yet. But I think it's going to be broken. Nobody thought that the Gretzky record would be broken, including Ovi. And then he did it. So I don't think this record stands. I think somebody will get after it at some point. I hope I'm alive to see it, but the show on Sunday at UBS was absolutely incredible. Every part of it. It was the perfect Ovi goal. It was the perfect celebration. And then everybody struck a perfect note in talking about it. Wayne Gretzky was unbelievable. His wife with the gift for Alex's wife, just so classy. You know, that's what Colleen Howe had done for Janet when Wayne broke the record. You know, Alex's speech, everything. It was just spot on. Perfect.
The little touch of Wayne Gretzky wearing the Gordie Howe pin was perfection. It was as if he was making Gordie Howe be present in that moment. And we know obviously he can't be, but he was making him be present in that moment with his memory. And it was Gretzky essentially wearing Gordie on his heart and then passing the torch. You can argue that when he passed the mic, it was passing the torch to Alex Ovechkin. I love that moment. I also loved that on 894, it was John Carlson who had the assist, the primary assist. And on 895, it was Tom Wilson. Other than Nicklas Backstrom, nobody's played in more games than with Alex Ovechkin than John Carlson and Tom Wilson. Now, Nicklas Backstrom, obviously, injury prevented him from playing. He's likely done. He was in the building, though. So Backstrom's there. Carlson gets 894, the assist. Tom Wilson gets 895 on the, you know, for the assist. I just thought that symmetry was also part of the perfect moment. The only thing missing from that moment was it wasn't a one-timer. He had to kind of, you know, pull the puck to him a little bit, or, you know, reach out and grab it a little bit and then fire away. That was the only thing missing, but we're not going to, I mean, that's just nitpicking right there, because it was from the office, or just above the office, on the power play, just an unreal shot, the kind of shot that Alex Ovechkin is one of few in the world can make, you know, can put that where he wants to put it. I agree with you, man. The whole thing was perfect. And now he's got it, Sean. And now the Washington Capitals got to start getting their game together. They're rightfully so. They've been consumed by this as well, right? And how can you not be? The entire hockey world was consumed by it. The entire sports world was consumed by it. I mean, you saw the video the NHL put together, you know, for Ovechkin. I mean, the legends in that video, Michael Jordan, Derek Jeter, Tom Brady, you know, Michael Phelps, Simone Biles, go on down the list, right? So the sports world is, just consumed with this. So clearly the Capitals are consumed with this. But now it's over. Now they've got five games before the playoffs begin. We're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens for a while here with JF once we get to that interview. That's a red-hot team right now. That's not an easy team. We've seen the Capitals be first in the division before, first in the conference before, play Montreal and lose. Now, it was 15 years ago when that happened, but it's happened. They got to get their game in order now, and they've got five games to do it. They're 2-4-1 in their past seven games, and it's lost in all of this, but in that game on Sunday, Alex's goal was the only goal that the Capitals scored in a 4-1 loss.
I don't think that the Capitals are that good a team going into the playoffs. Look, I know that they sit atop the East and second in the whole NHL, but I see issues, right? Like, I see issues everywhere. You talked about it. Alex's was the only goal, and it was a power play goal against an Islander team that has just been not good at. Defensively has been inept at times. They gave up 7 to Nashville.
Yes. Last night. They scored 6 and lost.
Yes. And So it's not the 94 Devils that we're talking about that they played against and they could only manage one goal. There's reason for concern there. They have not been a good team down the stretch. You could argue, and I will argue, I think the four best teams in the league are all in the West. And then I would argue that there's probably three teams in the East that are better than the Washington Capitals. So they are marginally a first-round advanced team.
Listen, you and I both in the Super 16 this week have Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, and Vegas in the top four. I have Winnipeg 1, Vegas 2, Colorado 3, Dallas 4. You have Dallas 1, Winnipeg 2, Colorado 3, Vegas 4. Slice it up however you want to. I think those are the top four teams. Then you have, at 5, the Tampa Bay Lightning. So do I, okay? You have Washington at 6. I've got him at 10 right now. I've got him behind Toronto, St. Louis, L.A., and Carolina. There are issues. Having watched them as I joined Tom Galitti, and by the way, let's do a quick, I mean, Tom joined us on the podcast last week, so maybe we can argue Tom got his due. But just an unbelievable job covering the Ovechkin chase, the great chase by Tom Galitti, pulling stories out from all over the place. Go if you haven't read it all, go back and read it all. It's just absolutely wonderful stuff. And there's still more coming from Tom on this whole thing. Nobody covered it better. So I wanted to give that shout out to Tom. But having joined him on this chase of the last three games, watching them against Carolina, Chicago, and the New York Islanders, the warts were obvious. First off, there's injuries now. Logan Thompson's out. We don't know how long. Alexi Protas is out. We don't know how long. Those are two big pieces. That's your number one goalie, and that's a huge player in your top six forward group. They've tried to insert Ryan Leonard, and I think Ryan Leonard's looked pretty good, but, I mean, it's overwhelming. It's a lot for Ryan Leonard. They don't have that dynamic element that some of these other teams do have. Tampa Bay's got Kucherov. Florida's got, you know, we know all the grind that they've got, and they've got Barkov, and they've got a championship mentality, right? Toronto's got Matthews, and they're playing way better, and they're defensively they've been much better too. There's concerns there for Washington. And now when you think about it, they're going to go up against Montreal most likely. And if Montreal continues to win and Ottawa slides a little bit, it'll be Ottawa. But that Montreal team is scary. Like, they're playing with house money right now. They're playing in a market that is just jazzed up and excited about them. The building rocks. And we're going to talk all about this with JF, but that's not a team I want to face in the first round of the playoffs, Sean. It's not a team I want to be anywhere near in the first round of the playoffs, unless I have that championship pedigree the way Florida does, and I'm thinking, I don't care who we're playing, or Tampa, and I don't care who we're playing. I think Washington doesn't have that.
Yeah, no, I like you said, I think warts is the perfect term. Can you imagine if the seedings stay the way they are today, that Montreal comes into Washington, who's banged up, and steals a game?
Who?
And they get to go back to the Bell Center 1-1. That place is going to be a powder keg. Like, I don't care who you are. That's a hard place to play when they're on in Montreal. That place is intimidating to the most hardened veteran in the NHL. It'll be crazy.
Yeah. But you say steals a game. Is it stealing a game if Montreal wins in Washington?
If you're the 8 seed, it's stealing a game.
Okay, but since the Four Nations face-off, the Montreal Canadiens have a 727 points percentage. The Washington Capitals are 614. Not bad. Really good. It's 12th in the league at that stretch, in the stretch since the Four Nations face-off. They've both played 22 games. Montreal's won 14. Washington's won 13. But you can argue that Montreal had, well, the stats show Montreal's been a better team in the last month and a half, right? So the balance of the season, no, of course not. Washington has earned this, no doubt about it. But Montreal's been arguably better than Washington has been in the past month and a half, and certainly in the past week and a half, 2 weeks. So now I want to see, Sean, I want to see Washington, now that this is behind them, if they can now push forward and be the team that 3 months ago, this chase wasn't necessarily in the forefront. You know what I mean? Like that, like it became, obviously, the closer he got, it became the focal point. But 3-4 months ago, it wasn't. It was always there, but it wasn't the focal point that it became the last couple of weeks. Now I want to see if they can get back to being that team. And with the injuries they have, I don't know if they can.
And how do they, right? Because it's over. You're going to have that hangover period, right? Like, I forget who, well, I think it was Dylan Strome who said when Ovi tied or got within a goal of the record, I forget which one it was, they partied like they won the Stanley Cup. Like, they were so excited. Like, the emotions have been so raw. Everybody's been a part of it. Everybody's wanted to be a part of it. The demands have been incredible, right? And so now you go back to quote-unquote normal. Things don't go back to normal for Alex. He was on Good Morning America today. He's completely in demand. But in theory, things go back to normal. You have nothing to play for. Most likely, the race is over for the goals. So now you think about resting people, right? Does Ovi take a couple of games off? Do other guys? Do you rest other guys? So you're not finding your game because you're not playing with your full lineup. And then you hit the playoffs. And there's only one day.
Yeah.
From the end of the regular season, depending on when you play. If you're one of those teams that plays on Thursday, you probably won't start until Sunday, so there's 2 days. But there's no time once your regular season ends to then flip a switch and say, all right, now we're going to play for real. Like, who you are when you get to the finish line is who you're going to be going into the playoffs. And I think, you know, if you ask their coach, is he comfortable with where the Capitals are now? I think the answer is no.
Right. And now I think this time off after their Sunday has been big for them. They don't play again until tomorrow night, Thursday night. I think that's a big thing for them. They were off on Monday. I think they had a skills practice on Tuesday, and they're back on a regular practice today, which is Wednesday. That could be the time that they use to unwind from all of this and then take a look ahead. But your points are you're spot on, right? I mean, you got nothing to play for. If you got any guys who are banged up, you don't want them banged up going into the playoffs. You might be resting guys. You know you're already going to be missing Protas and Thompson here for a little bit. Does Ovechkin take a game or two off? I don't know the answer to that right now. So it's hard. And this isn't Washington. Washington isn't the New York Rangers of last year. By that I mean going into the playoffs playing a team that backs in the way Washington did, right? The Capitals backed into the playoffs last year. Somebody had to make it. And the Rangers were the top seed, and the Rangers got them, and the Capitals were all banged up too, and they lost more guys, and it wasn't a series. I mean, it was 4 games, 8 days. It was over really fast. That's not happening this time around, not for the Washington Capitals. They're the top seed now, but Montreal is not backing in. You know, they're full steam ahead going into the playoffs, and they're going to lock it up here pretty soon. And if they keep going and Ottawa slips, Ottawa's not backing in either, right? I mean, this is a team that has pushed hard for a month and a half to get into the position. They've separated. These two teams in the wild card have separated themselves from the other teams that just didn't want to take it, the Rangers, the Blue Jackets, the Red Wings, right? That's not a back-end situation, so it's a little bit more of a dangerous situation for the Capitals. It's a slippery slope, and it's going to be interesting to see how they navigate it right now because of the fact of they're coming off this incredible high that, you know, no team in the last 30 years has experienced, and they've got to find a way to get it done and get it together here in a very short period of time. So they may be the most fascinating team to watch over the last 10 days of the season here, Sean. 8 days of the season.
Are we tired of watching the Washington Capitals? I'm just kidding. Wow. But let's get to JF first and hear what he has to say about what's probably the best story, the best team story right now in the NHL, because Ovi's the best individual story, even though he won't say it's an individual story. He's the best individual story, but the Montreal Canadiens are the best team story. And nobody knows him better than JF, so here's this interview with JF.
And this interview is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's the best French-Canadian accent we've ever had on the podcast. JF, thanks so much for jumping on with us. This is your first time on our podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'll be going with my best English for you guys this morning.
That's what we need. We need your very best English. So in your very best English, how in the world have the Montreal Canadiens done this? And, you know, to get themselves to a point here where they're pretty much a lock to make the playoffs when it didn't look like this coming out of the Four Nations faceoff, or going into the Four Nations faceoff, I should say.
No, not at all done. It's almost like a done deal if we're talking about playoff. But if you're asking the question in the room, they will say nothing is done yet, but they are still looking ahead. And ahead, it's the Ottawa Senators, who are only 3 points ahead of Montreal. Both teams are playing each other on Friday night in Ottawa, so it's still possible for Montreal to catch up for the first wild card. But from the outside, it might be looking like a surprise, but this team is playing some really good hockey since Christmas. In terms of standings, we are talking about the 7 best teams in the National Hockey League since Christmas, 25-13-6 in their last 44 games. So it's not only good luck for the Montreal Canadiens. Right now, it's 6 wins in a row, 4 for the Habs.
Before we get to how they did it, tell me what the city's like.
It's buzzing, guys. You know, this city can be really special. We saw it during the Four Nations, but one day spring will be coming in Montreal. Right now, we still have a little bit of snow, but when the team is winning, there's some electricity in the building. Everyone is talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Just to give you an example, yesterday, when there was some rumors about Ivan Demidov, I think I received 10 or 15 phone calls in a span of 60 minutes. My nephew, who's a Montreal policeman, was calling me and he was working. He said, "I'm sorry to bug you, GF, but my partner is hoping to know, can it be true? Is it true that Demidov is coming to Montreal?" So the team is rolling, the city is buzzing. And at the Bell Center, it's something great. It can be a really tough market, but when this team is playing well, the fans are giving a ton of love to the Montreal Canadiens.
And it's not just playing well, Jeff. This seems like a really likable team, too. Like, they genuinely seem to really click, and the players themselves seem to genuinely just be enjoying it and likable. Do you get that sense as well? And maybe is that part of the reason, too?
Yes, it's true. And you're talking about a team who's still in the rebuilding mode. But the other thing also, like, players are growing in Montreal. Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, and now Lane Hutson, Samuel Montembeau, who's always smiling. He's having a ton of pressure. Being the number one goalie with the Montreal Canadiens, when you're a French Canadian, it's not easy. But to use the word of Carey Price, Montembeau might be a type of go lucky guy, like never too nervous or anything. So yeah, this team there's a lot of good stories. Like, Brendan Gallagher is playing in Montreal for more than 10 years, and now he's having the feeling that he will be back in the playoff. Josh Anderson, who's the Bill Masterton candidate here in Montreal, is having a really nice season after a tough one last year. So there's a lot of good stories so far with the Montreal Canadiens. And Martin St-Louis also, we need to talk about Martin St-Louis a little bit. He's doing a heck of a job as a head coach. He was probably the perfect fit for building a young team with a great culture. And St. Louis is also one of the favorite in Montreal.
And that's what I was going to ask you about. Like, what is it about Marty? Like, he was a good player, but there's a lot of good players in this league who went on coaches and failed.
That's true. But if there's something great about Martin St. Louis, yes, he was a good hockey player, but he was a really big worker also. And it's the same thing with that hockey team. Marty is probably spending a ton of hours at the rink looking for solutions. And he's always having the positive mind. His new mantra now, it's what's next. Like, if we're losing the next game, what's next? It's not the end of the world. We need to bounce back quickly. And, like, players are following the leader. Yes, it's Nick Suzuki with the C on his jersey, but there's also a pretty big leader. Not the biggest one. still 5'7", Martin Saint-Louis, but he's a pretty big leader.
Jaffer, are you surprised? Did you expect this from the Canadians here, you know, in the second half of this season, where they would go from a rebuilding team to a team that takes that next step and really it takes charge of that next step?
No, I will not be lying, Dan, Sean, I'm surprised. It's not something that I was able to predict. You can see that the future was going to be bright one day, but I'm surprised to realize that this day might be coming sooner than we all thought. There's also some big factor, like Lane Hutson. He's a kid of 20, 21 years old, but honestly, Dan, he's changing the face of this team. Without Lane Hutson, I don't think we're talking about a playoff push this year.
Has there been a mass apology to Slefkowski yet?
A what?
A massive
apology.
No, a mass apology from everyone.
Everybody's saying sorry to him because he's playing well.
There a reception line outside the door every day for people to apologize to him?
That's a good question. Look, Lane Hutson was the 62 pick overall, a late second rounder, and Juraj Slafkovský is having a ton of humor. And Slafkovský was saying, like, if we're doing the draft tomorrow morning, I think Hutson will be picked first, and I should have been picked 62. So it might be a change of dynamic also.
In regards to Hutson, so we see the dynamic ability, right? I mean, the edge work, the skating, it's... You know, I mean, it's the new age of defense. It's the Quinn Hughes that we see, right? I mean, like that type of skating and that type of impact offensively. Tell us about his impact defensively in the last 6 to 8 weeks.
There's a ton of improvement. If we're talking about the last 22 games, so since the return of the break from the Four Nations, in terms of offensive number, it's really great. It's 23 points in 22 games, 3 goals, 20 assists. But the other number, it's plus 19. It's the highest plus minus on this team, plus 19. And now, if we go to since the beginning of the season, Hutson is minus 1. So yes, he's playing well offensively. He's creating a lot of chances because he's so smart, so dynamic. He can turn around so easily. He's breaking a ton of ankle. Look at the replay yesterday. Justin Hall, maybe his ankle, we can find it in the sixth row at the Bell Center this morning. So, but defensively, he's smart, good positioning. He's playing right now with Caden Gooley. But the other thing, they are asking a rookie defenseman to be playing on his weak side. He's playing on the right side, and Gooley's playing on the left side. And he's not the strongest one, but he's going to be able to go for a little body check or just a step on the stick and taking the good position. So, yes, defensively, it's the one thing that Martin Saint-Louis will be saying about Lane Hutson. We're all looking in terms of offensive ability, but the improvement of his game on the other side is pretty, pretty impressive also.
You brought up Demidoff a little earlier in the interview. And clearly, he's a great player. I mean, what he did in the KHL as a teenager has never been done before. So obviously, as you mentioned, there's a lot of excitement. Is there a little sense of a double-edged sword, though? Because here comes this great talent into a room that you just talked about that has found footing, and everybody kind of understands, and they've been through a really hard time together. And you don't want to bring in a player like this and say, here's six fourth line minutes, and maybe we'll sneak you onto the second power play. That's not why he's here.
I think they're going to be patient or careful with Demidov, but you're talking about a high-end skill type of player, 49 points this year in the KHL without a ton of ice time, 13 minutes only per game, 13.45. But the good thing, if you're looking at the puzzle in Montreal, Oliver Kapanen right now is skating on the second or third unit with Alex Newhook and Patrick Laine. And Michael Pezzetta, who played only 22 or 23 games, is skating on the fourth line. So they are two players who might be pushed out of the lineup, and you will not change the puzzle drastically. So I think it's more than plausible to see Demidov in that lineup till the end of the year. Probably the plan for Ivan Demidov, first, he need to be in Canada. They're still working on visa and some stuff, but probably Demidov will be playing against the Blackhawks Monday or against the Hurricanes for the last game of the season on next Wednesday.
Like you said, there's so much excitement in the market for him. Like you'd mentioned, you got, you know, 10 or 15 phone calls. Your brother-in-law, policeman, calls you while he's at work. do you see Demidov as being part of the a big part of the puzzle for the Canadians in the first round? You know, is he that type of? Can he do that? Is it too, is it asking too much for a guy to do that? Is it asking for the too much for the team to embrace it for, yeah, for the, what they've done?
I think we need to lower maybe the expectation. It's a good point. But there's a pretty good example with that team just 1 year ago. When Lane Hudson arrived in Montreal, he played the last two games of the regular season against Detroit. It was not the same scenario because Montreal was not anywhere close to a playoff spot, but they were playing against the Wings, and the Wings were fighting for their life. And Hudson was maybe the best player on the ice for those two games against Detroit. And Cole Caulfield also was playing during that Stanley Cup push with Montreal. And Caulfield was just getting out of Wisconsin without a ton of experience, and he was able to have an impact quickly. It could be the same story with Ivan Demidov. And if Montreal is facing the Washington Capitals in the first round, the Caps, we should take a look also at Ryan Leonard. Leonard could have an impact on that team right away for his first playoff experience.
So we've talked about almost everybody, but we haven't talked about Manning, right? And the job that they've done and the pressure that they were under, right? Nobody, I don't think many people in Montreal embraced what Kent Hughes was selling for a long time.
Yes and no. The fans were more patient than we could have expected. And the good thing with Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton is the plan was clear. And they were not cheating also. By cheating, I mean they were not going after a big free agent. They were not going for a big trade and ruining maybe the future of this team. There was some hockey trade. The example, Justin Barron for Alexandre Carrier earlier this year. It was not the biggest trade of the year, but for the Habs, it was a pretty good trade. Carrier is a top four defenseman, playing more than 20 minutes. So we need to, if I'm saying some good words about Martin St-Louis this morning, kudos also to Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton because they are doing a good job here in Montreal.
You know what I loved what they did was they allowed the team to dictate it at the start of coming out of the Four Nations break, right? I mean, if that team doesn't come out and play well, let's say they lose five games in a row, they're trading David Savard. They're trading.
Yep.
They may be trading
Christian Dvorak. They could be trading Yoel Armia. But there was a talk between the captain, Nick Suzuki, and Kent Hughes. And basically, the word of Kent Hughes, it was, it's going to be in your hand. If you want this team to go for a playoff run, look, start winning some hockey games before the trade deadline, and we might decide to do nothing. But by doing nothing, it was some word of confidence about this team. So... And the Canadians, before the Four Nations, it was a tough stretch for Montreal, but right after the Four Nations. And a good thing also, there was not a lot of Montreal Canadiens players during that tournament. Yoel Armia, Patrick Laine, Nick Suzuki was not there. Samuel Montembeau was there, but he was not playing. So a lot of those guys were benefiting from some rest.
But Sam did a great, great blog for LNH.com.
He was really good. Sam is quite, he's funny, he's down to earth. It's 30 wins now for him. And yesterday we were laughing because he said, okay, I'm not going to talk about the playoff yet. I don't want to be talking too fast. But he's probably the human being who's talking the faster that you can find, even in French or in English, it's the same thing. Sam is talking like 3,000 words in a minute, so it's pretty impressive.
Well,
I wanted to ask you before we let you go. Patrick Laine was such a big part of this story early on, right? He scored all those power play goals, and it was such a feel-good story. And he kind of faded into the background, which I think was a good thing. But now he's at 20 goals, and I'm just curious, when you look at him from where he was at the beginning of the year to where he is now, like it seems like he's found peace. And he may never be what Austin Matthews was or is in that competition that they had coming in, but it seems like he's found peace and can be a really useful player for this team.
That's a good point. I think he's finding peace mentally. He's in a good spot now in Montreal. He's playing in a market where fans will be behind him, cheering for him. It's 20 goals this year, but it's 15 goals during the power play. So you need to accept Patrick Laine as Patrick Laine. He will not be the driver of this team. He could be a good actor, playing some key minutes during the power play, but at 5-on-5, it can be hard for Patrick Laine.
Well, JF, this was great. We needed some education on the Montreal Canadiens, and you gave it to us. So thank you so much. It's a fun story. And
it's a great story.
It's a great story. Keep covering it, man.
Thanks also to let me shine my big French-Canadian accent this morning.
There you go. Well, dude, we need some of that on our podcast.
First of all, you speak better English than I do, so that's not going for us. And dude, enjoy springtime playoffs in Montreal. There is no place better. I'm ultra jealous that I will not be there.
You should come to Montreal, guys.
Maybe we will. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Great stuff there from JF, and that interview was brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. So, Sean, I mean, he knows the team so well. Loved what he was saying about the surprise factor that he has, and it's really going to be interesting what happens with Demidov.
For sure, and there's so much pressure on him. But in the vein of how we opened the episode, I have one more mea culpa to make. Earlier, I was on Sirius. You're stomping grounds. You're on weekly. I'm on monthly. And this is probably why I was on. And I was talking about how great the St. Louis Blues have been and how Moore's coming with their young players playing well. And I said, oh, and they have Demidov on the way. And clearly I meant Dalibor Dvorsky. So just, you know, last week was I got all of my mistakes out of the way. And now I'm going to be perfect for the rest of the season.
All right. Perfect. We're expecting perfection. We expect perfection all the time, Sean. When it doesn't happen, it becomes a surprise. That's just the way you usually deliver. So this is a lot of mea culpas here. I'm going to say this is surprising for you.
Yeah, well, I'm secure enough that I can own my mistakes and I'm going to be better from it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got to apologize because what I just said is totally untrue. You make mistakes all the time. So
speaking of making mistakes and becoming better of it, let's talk about the New York Rangers.
Well, I don't know if they're becoming better of it from the mistakes that they've made this season.
No, but they should.
Yeah.
Isn't that the whole point, to learn from what you've done wrong? Look, they're on the outside looking in, and after the loss to Tampa Bay the other day, which they gave up 3 goals in, what, a minute 45, and just look overwhelmed, they're not going to catch Ottawa or Montreal. This was the Eastern Conference champion last year. What happened?
Well, they were Eastern Conference finalist last year. There's a mistake. You should apologize. Florida Panthers were the Eastern Conference champion. But you know what? We'll just keep
moving on.
They were the one seed. They were the President's Trophy winners. And now what happened? It's a great question.
I know it is.
The answer could take, honestly, hours to really dive fully into. We're not going to do that, obviously. They're not going to go to the playoffs. They could be eliminated. They play the Philadelphia Flyers tonight, Wednesday night. By the way, it's the JD and Sam game, right? Sam Rosen and John Davidson back in the booth together one last time. The game's on TNT. That's a really cool thing that's happening Wednesday night at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers-Flyers game is not a really cool thing. It's two teams that are not going to go to the playoffs right now. Listen, there's so many ways to go with what's gone wrong for the Rangers this year. But to me, it just goes back to we've seen this script before. In the first year under Gerard Gallant, they played well. They had chemistry. They pushed. They got into the playoffs. They went all the way to the Eastern Conference Final. And they ran out of gas. And it happened. The second year, not nearly as good. The chemistry was not the same. They didn't seem to be as together as they were. They get into the playoffs, and they lose in a seven-game series to the New Jersey Devils. And they were nowhere to be found in Game 7 of that game. First year under Peter Laviolette, President's Trophy. Everybody's playing over their heads. Everybody's having career years. The goalie was great. They came back. I think they had 28 or 29 comeback wins. The resiliency was incredible. They had the slogan, "No Quit New York," and it actually made sense. And they get to the Eastern Conference Final. And they lose to a better team. Frankly, just a better team. The Florida Panthers were a better team, as they proved by going on to win the Stanley Cup. Well, this year, same thing happened. Guys weren't playing up to the way they were, the way you expect, the way they proved last year. Power play went down the drain a little bit. Top end guys not performing. Guys getting traded. A terrible stretch in November and December. And this is how you get here. And then you brought up the Tampa Bay game. To me, that's the New Jersey Devils game 7, right? Got to win the game. You want to stay in the playoff race? Monday night against Tampa Bay at home, you've got to find a way to get 2 points. It doesn't matter if you give up one. Tampa Bay is on the other side of the bracket. They're fine. You can give up one to them, but you got to get two. They give up a goal 7 seconds after Adam Fox tries a spinorama move on a two-on-one and shorthanded situation. Instead of passing the puck to an open Vincent Trocheck, he tries a spinorama move. Puck doesn't get to the net. Here comes the Tampa Bay Lightning with Kucherov, Point, and Gensel. They score a goal. And then before you could blink your eyes, it was 3-0. You want to win a game? You got to win a game? You can't have that happen. You can give up one. It happens. You can't have one turn into three. New Jersey Devils game on Saturday, got to go in and win that game. That's a banged up Devils team that's struggling to get to the finish line at times. They're going to the playoffs. You lose 4-0, and there was barely a fight in that game. That's how you do it. That's what a team that has high expectations, that doesn't make the playoffs, that's what they look like.
Did I hear in the broadcast of the Tampa game that the Rangers don't have a comeback win all year?
Oh, I'm not – you know what? You might have. I'm not 100% sure on that statistic, but they have double-digit times this season they've given up two goals or more in a two-minute stretch. Multiple times. Double digits we're talking about here for that. They are currently, I want to say, 9-22-1, if I'm correct on that stat, against teams that are in a playoff position right now. Teams that are not in a playoff position don't have good records against teams that are in a playoff position, and that is the New York Rangers right now. I'm sorry, I was wrong about that. 11-22-5, so I don't know what's better or worse.
You weren't even close.
No, I was wrong. That's, but I looked it up. I had it written down here in my trusty notebook, and I found the stat. 11-22-5 against teams that are going to the playoffs this season. And we're pretty much locked in, I think, where we're at for the playoffs. 11-22-5.
So let me ask you that, Dan. I would argue that perhaps they're the most disappointing team in the NHL this year. But they have some company.
Yeah.
The Detroit Red Wings. The Buffalo Sabres, who are playing lights out right now. I've seen
this. They're following the Buffalo Sabres script.
Seen this script play out before.
Yep.
And I think we've had so much time to digest it that we forget about the Nashville Predators.
Yeah.
So who's the most disappointing team for you?
To me, it's the Rangers, because they won the President's Trophy last year. They pretty much returned intact. And you've got and guys like Alexei Lafreniere were supposed to, who took the next step last year, signed a big contract, was supposed to get better. He's not, right? You know, they have, of the teams you just mentioned, they have the best goalie, okay? They were predicted by many that I saw to win the Stanley Cup this season. Nashville was predicted by a lot to get to the playoffs and to be a good team, and that's been a disappointment throughout the season. But to me, it's the Rangers. Like, you win the President's Trophy, you get to the Eastern Conference Final, you return intact, and you're not, like, over the hill, right? They got some older guys, but they're not over the hill. And this is what happens. This is how, you know, coaches get fired and, you know, core players get traded and moved out when you have a season like this.
I'm going to say the Detroit Red Wings. And the reason I'm the Detroit Red Wings is not because they're worse than the New York Rangers. What's happened to the Rangers is hard to fathom. But what's happened to the Detroit Red Wings is also hard to fathom, because this was supposed to be the year, right? The incremental steps up, it was there for the taking. There ended up being some teams that were not very good that are traditionally good. The Boston Bruins, who I forgot to put on my list of most disappointing teams. They're in last place in the East, although they did just beat the Devils soundly. The Rangers weren't good. There were some openings. And instead of Detroit taking it in the next step of the Iser plan, which was a given going into February, the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators are doing it. And we had talked about Ottawa, right? It was always Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo, who was going to get there first. It ended up being Ottawa. We never talked about Montreal, and here they are. And here's Detroit, who's going to miss again.
Yeah. By the way, mea culpa, I did have the Boston Bruins picked to win the Eastern Conference and go to the Stanley Cup Final before the season. So maybe they are the most disappointing team in my mind. I kind of forgot about it because the Rangers' struggles and disappointment is right front and center in my face, you know, that Boston's just been very disappointing. But, I mean, the Detroit Red Wings, they may be the most disappointing team in the last month and a half, right? I mean, over the last 5-6 weeks, right? Let's not forget, Sean, remember how excited we were going to Columbus for the outdoor game, the Stadium Series game, at Ohio Stadium, at the Horseshoe, the Red Wings and the Blue Jackets fighting for a playoff spot. This is a meaningful game and everything like that. The Blue Jackets won in Detroit 2 nights before that Stadium Series game, which was, by the way, a phenomenal experience. Lived up to the hype. But starting with that loss, the Red Wings are 6-12-1 in 19 games, starting with that loss on February 27th. Going into that game, they were 9-1-1 in their previous 11 games. So they had played their way in, and when it got hard, they fell apart. And we've seen it too often with the Detroit Red Wings. We saw it last year too, right? They give you hope if you're a Red Wings fan. They bring you back in. They make you believe, and then they fade. They start to fall apart a little bit. So I'll ask you this question, Sean: where do they go from here? Because this is not a young team. They have younger players. Some are on the rise. Some are there and need to take the next step is to just make them, you know, regulars in the NHL for some of the guys, right? But they've got a lot of veteran players in this team. So if I'm going to tell you you have a veteran team that just missed the playoffs and you've got young guys on the rise, wouldn't that suggest to you that it could get worse before it gets better?
It could, but I don't know how you do anything but run it back. Right?
You could do that.
For years, you've
run it back to what? Missing the playoffs again?
No, run it back and hope you make up those 4 points. Look, the bottom of both conferences are filled with average teams. And it's just a matter of who becomes above average for an extended period of time. That's how the bottom of each conference works every year. So you've preached patience and preached patience, and you've preached this plan. And there clearly is a plan, because they have young players scattered all over the place, young impact players. They have probably three goalies coming up that people talk about as being potential game breakers. So you do it all over again next year, and you hope that's the year. And then if it's not, I don't know where you go.
Well, maybe you're right. We'll see. I mean, there's a to me there's a significant decision to be made on how to proceed, not for the Detroit Red Wings, not with who's going to be making the decisions, but just how you go about proceeding with that. And I think there's big decisions to be made with the New York Rangers on how to proceed and who will be making some of those decisions. You know, it is at least on the bench. I think it's a fair question to ask right now. So those are the Bruins are going to need a new coach. We don't know where the Nashville Predators go. Those are the disappointments. I mean, they're all disappointments right now. I won't put the Columbus Blue Jackets in that category. They were playing far and away better than anybody had expected of them. And then it kind of just faded on them a little bit. But that was almost, I don't want to say it was expected because, you know, when we were there in Columbus, you didn't see it coming because there was just so much hype and so much buzz and so much excitement for the team. But, you know, they faded and they were in a place that I don't think anybody thought they would be in. So I'm not putting the Blue Jackets in that category, but certainly in the East, you got to put the Rangers, you got to put the Red Wings, you got to put the Bruins. And out West, you have to put the Nashville Predators in that disappointing category.
And probably the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, yeah. After the season they had last year. Absolutely. Yeah.
To see what they did last night, by the way, you just got to bring this up and we'll do it in passing, but 3 goals in the last minute, never been done in the NHL to win.
To win.
Never, ever in the history of the NHL. Going back to Mud Brunito.
Nice name. Good pull.
I won't make up a whole story about him and get half the facts wrong. I'm just going to throw his name out there.
To throw a name out. That's good.
Hockey's been played for a long time. Countless number of games. And nobody's ever done what the Vancouver Canucks did last night. And it's a testament to fighting, right? To not giving up. Your season's sliding away. You're playing what I think is the best team in the NHL. And you should just go home and lick your wounds. And they didn't. And it almost makes it worse because you're like, this is a team that could do something.
Yeah.
They're not going to.
You got to give them a lot of credit, though, because Granlund scored the empty net goal with just over 2 minutes to go, and you thought it was it. And then bang, 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 and then they win it in overtime. I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit for that. But they're, you know, too little, too late, I guess you can argue. Not too little, too late last night, but for their season. Let's turn it to a positive thing, Sean, before we get out of here. How about the scoring race? Now, the numbers are not what they were a year ago when Nikita Kucherov had 144 points and Nathan MacKinnon had 140. But it was a great scoring race then. And it's a terrific scoring race now. Nikita Kucherov has 115 points with 5 games remaining. Nathan MacKinnon has 116 points. He's first, but only 3 games remaining. I mean, this is some fun stuff that kind of is getting brushed under a little bit here, probably from the Ovechkin thing and certainly from the playoff races. But these two guys are doing it again. And now Kucherov plays the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's tonight. He's got the Red Wings at home on Friday, the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday at home. Then there's a Panthers game on Tuesday, April 15th. That's could be a really big game. And he closes at Madison Square Garden, licking his chops against the New York Rangers team that by then will certainly have been eliminated. 5 games, make up 1 point. Kucherov again for the Art Ross Trophy?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's funny, as you were talking about it, it's not really a rivalry, right? It's not
No. Or
any of those kind of things. Neither guy is that way. But it has been a rivalry on the ice for the last couple of years. I think Kucherov wins it. And I told you last week, I'm coming around. I'm the biggest MacKinnon supporter and the biggest Av supporter around. I think Kucherov's the MVP. I just, with what he's done and how he's driven that team, If he wins the scoring title, I don't see how you can't make that argument. So it's unbelievable. And with five games left, I think Colorado's done like 4 days before the season ends.
They are. Yeah.
5 days.
They're done on April 13th. They're done in a couple of days. It's really amazing.
Yeah. They get a lot of rest before they play that Dallas in the first round, which is might be the best of all the series. There's some good ones. That might be the best one.
Yeah.
But Kucherov could win by five or six.
He could.
Two games left. He could score six in those two extra games. So just a great player. Criminally undervalued and underappreciated.
He is so good. You brought up the Hart Trophy. So you're a big goalie guy, right? So where are you on goalies for the Hart Trophy? And I ask you this question with Kucherov in mind. Do you think Connor Hellebuck is a Hart Trophy candidate or a favorite to win the Hart Trophy this year?
Well, I definitely think he's a candidate. Personally, I haven't done my trophy trackers yet, which are going to run next week on NHL.com. I, off the top of my head right now, I'd probably have him third on my ballot. Like, I'm not one of those guys, certainly, as part of the quote-unquote goalie union, that would ever say the goalies can't be the MVP because they have their own trophy. When you go to 32 teams, it's harder to say he's the most valuable player in the league. But I would argue that on 15 teams this year, the goalie is the MVP.
Is the goalie the MVP on the Tampa Bay Lightning? And the reason I ask you that is look at the numbers. Vasilevsky and Hellebuck have played the same number of games. Vasilevsky has one more start. Hellebuck's a 2.02 and a 9.24. 2.02 goals against average and a 9.24 save percentage. Vasilevsky's 2.14 and a 9.23 save percentage. He's actually faced more shots. They're really, really close. I don't think people recognize how close Vasilevsky is to Hellebuck this season in all those numbers and games played and everything, because Hellebuck has been that guy all year for Winnipeg, hands down their most valuable player. But it's not the case necessarily with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But is Vasilevsky their MVP and not Kucherov?
No. I maybe we could go co-MVPs. I don't see it. I think the reason that he's not noticed as much as Hellebuck is because of last year. And Hellebuck was this good last year, and Vasilevsky not coming off of his back surgery. He's back to that all-world goaltender he was before. And if I'm playing the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the playoffs, I'm petrified that I'm going to get that Vasilevsky. To me, it's still Kucherov because of the drop-off, with everybody else as far as producing offense and everything. But as I talk about it, like, the one thing with the Jets is they play a system that provides some security for Connor Hellebuck. He knows what's happening. And as disciplined as the Tampa Bay Lightning can be, sometimes they just go wild.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, oh, if Vassie's back there, we'll go everybody up. And if they break it out, Vassie will stop the breakaway. So we're good.
It's true. I just think it's an interesting part. I think Kucherov is their MVP too, for everything he's done this season. And I still think Nathan MacKinnon is the MVP of the league this season. And it's because of all the adversity that you want to look at that the Colorado Avalanche have had to deal with this season. The goaltender changes, the Rantanen trade, remaking the roster. Is Landeskog coming back or is he not coming back? Nichushkin being out for a long time. And the driving force, and I think MacKinnon, as great as Cale Makar is, I still think MacKinnon is the driving force of that team. He's the bull in the china shop. He's the guy that drives it. He's been just the constant all the way through, and he's right there in the scoring race with Kucherov right now too. So I still think it's MacKinnon. It's close. And you can make a case too, Leon Draisaitl as well, for the season he's had. So listen, it's the scoring race is once again a lot of fun. The trophies will be debated. Our trophy trackers are coming out next week. So definitely take a look at that. And we're closing in on it, Sean. I mean, last day of the regular season is only 8 days away from now. It's pretty crazy. The playoffs start 10 days from now. It feels like the season has flown by, but the best part is still to come.
Yes, it is right around the corner. Trust me, I've been sitting down and trying to do playoff planning for the last few days, and I feel that clock ticking. But before we get out of here, there is a playoff going on right now, and it's going to be tomorrow and Saturday, and it is one of the best tournaments ever, and that's the Frozen Four. And it's in St. Louis this year. Louis Korak, our correspondent in St. Louis, who's just documented the 13-game winning streak, is going to be all over that for us. There's some great stories, four great teams left. Just fantastic. Denver, the defending champions, are still there. BU, Western Michigan, and Penn State making their first appearance along with Western Michigan. The games are on TV this weekend. I don't want to tell you not to watch NHL games, but if you can sneak in and watch some NCAA hockey this weekend, you'll be rewarded because it's fantastic theater.
And Penn State's a great story, right? I mean, that's a fantastic story. Wasn't a D1 program. When did they become a D1 program? It was like 12 years ago, something like that, right? Like, and now they're in the Frozen Four.
You can ask Pete Jensen, the host of the Fantasy Podcast here in our network of podcasts. Pete is a proud alumni, and he is over the moon.
He should be. I would be, too. If my school had a D1 hockey team, that'd be great. But they don't, so it's all right. I'll live. We'll be fine with it. But this was a lot of fun. We thank JF Chaumont, for coming on with us, talking all things Montreal Canadiens, giving them their due. And they're going to be a team we're talking about here for the next couple of weeks, I think, for sure, Sean, if not longer. As always, the podcast is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.